What is AA? Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. Welcome to the sponsorship group of Alcoholics Anonymous. This is an open meeting of AA, and as such, we welcome everyone. However, we limit participation to alcoholics. In accordance with our seventh tradition, we have no dues or fees, but we are self-supporting through our own contributions. If you are not an alcoholic, please do not put money in the basket. What's the matter with the microphone?
It's tinny.
It's tinny? Go to another meeting. The goal of this meeting is to carry the message of hope to the still suffering alcoholic. It is our experience that carrying AA's message is essential in recovering from the disease of alcoholism. As such, we encourage our members to visit with hospitals, jails, rehabs, and other institutions. If you would like to participate in our group activities or need a sponsor, see any home group member after the meeting. Will active home group members please identify themselves?
Oh!
Scary. Please be mindful that we are guests at this institution, and it's our group's desire to leave every meeting place in better condition than it was when we arrived. If you have a cell phone or pager, please shut it off, and we ask that you limit your movement and discussions during the meeting so as to not disrupt the speaker. And now we have some AA readings, and with the original manuscript of How It Works, I would like Kerry to read the original manuscript of How It Works.
Oh, Kerry!
Hi, I'm Kerry. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Kerry.
This is the original manuscript of How It Works. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our directions. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program, usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a way of life which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those, too, who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to follow directions. At some of these, you may balk. You may think you can find an easier, softer way. We doubt if you can. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go, absolutely. Remember that you're dealing with alcohol. Cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for you. But there is one who has all power. That one is God. You must find him now. Half measures will avail you nothing. You stand at the turning point, throw yourself under his protection and care with complete abandon. Now we think you can take it. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as your program of recovery. 1. Admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care and direction of God as we understood him. 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6. Were entirely willing that God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly on our knees asked him to remove our shortcomings, holding nothing back. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make complete amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our contact with God, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual experience as a result of this course of action, we tried to carry this message to others, especially alcoholics, and to practice these principles in all our affairs. You may exclaim, what an order. I can't go through with it. Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapters of the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after have been designed to sell you three pertinent ideas. A, that you are alcoholic and cannot manage your own life. B, that probably no human power can relieve your alcoholism. C, that God can and will. If you are not convinced on these vital issues, you ought to reread this book to this point or else throw it away.
And now we have the AA's traditions. I'd like Jim to read the traditions for us, please. Alcoholic. During its first decade, AA as a fellowship accumulated substantial experience, which indicated that certain group attitudes and principles were particularly valuable in assuring the survival of the informal structure of the fellowship. In 1946, in the fellowship's international journal, the AA Grapevine, these principles were reduced to writing by the founders and early members as the 12 Traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous. They're accepted and endorsed by the membership as a whole at the International Convention of AA at Cleveland, Ohio in 1950. Here's the short form. 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants, they do not govern. 3, the only requirement for AA membership is the desire to stop drinking. 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. 6, an AA group will never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, AA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinions on outside issues, hence the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. And we have a big book reading. I'd like Todd to read this big book reading for us, please. All right, Todd.
My name is Todd, alcoholic.
Hey, Todd.
Helping others is the foundation stone of your recovery. A kindly act once in a while isn't enough. You have to act the good Samaritan every day if need be. You may mean the loss of many nights' sleep, great interference with your pleasures, interruptions to your business. It may mean sharing your money in your home, counseling frantic wives and relatives, innumerable trips to police courts, sanitariums, hospitals, jails, and asylums.
Right.
Your telephone may jangle at any time of the day or night. Your wife may sometimes say she is neglected. A drunk may smash the furniture in your home or burn a mattress. Been there, done that one. You may have to fight with him if he is violent. Done that one. Sometimes you will have to call a doctor or administer sedatives under his direction. Another time you may have to send for the police or an ambulance. Occasionally, I never read this before, I've done all that. Well, occasionally you will have to meet such conditions.
Okay, back to the meeting. Is there anyone who has an AA-related announcement, please? Yes, sir.
John Alcoholic.
Hi, John.
The sponsorship group here is holding their 9th anniversary meeting in 2 weeks. Right here, March 14th, free spaghetti dinner, no dues or fees, and Clancy I will be the speaker.
Thank you very much. Thanks for sharing. Are there any other AA-related announcements, please? Okay. A home group member will talk for 5 minutes on sponsorship and will introduce the main speaker. Tonight we have Todd is going to speak on sponsorship, and he will introduce the main speaker.
My name is Tom, still an alcoholic.
Hey,
I don't know how I got nominated for this. I guess I got a lot of experience with different sponsors in different states. You know what I mean? A lot of good people have tried to help me along my way in Alcoholics Anonymous, from Florida to New York to Jersey. When I got to York, I watched what people did. You know what I mean? And I started to learn little bit by little bit what a sponsor's supposed to do and what he's not supposed to do and stuff like that. And I guess my main thing to say would be, like, to a lot of people in this room that I know that sponsor people, and the sponsorship is really easy. If you watch people, there'll be people behind them. They pretty much talk like they talk, and there'll be people behind them. And those are the people that I try to stick with today, because there's something going on for all them people to stick together and be talking the same way. And, Jim tried to help me, and I'm just coming to the realization with the sponsor, and it's actually a woman, which is really weird for me. But it's not weird in the same way, because today I shared things with her that I've never been able to share with another man. And it was a man in the back seat, and I don't know, maybe that's God for the first time in my life. And, you know, sponsorship is important, but obviously I've had Randy Jefferson, Steve Farnsworth, Jim Bach, Patty Burke, and none of them could keep me sober. And they all say I was a good dude and I helped a lot of people. But today I'm trying to, this is just where I'm at today, trying to find God in every situation, you know? And it's been beaten, not really beaten into me, just talked about, and I believed it the last few days. I'm trying to, you know, because I keep coming in and out. And I, like I said, sponsorship is real important, but I gotta be willing. You know what I mean? And I was never willing. I could never get honest with Jim. I could never get honest with Randy. And they cared a lot about me, you know? I'm not really sure what to say, you know what I mean? Except for watch what people do. And there are usually people following them because they stay sober because they've been through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's very apparent, you know what I mean? If you just watch the people that talk about the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, they just talk about it. But the people that walk the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, people walk behind them. You know what I mean? If you just talk, it gets deciphered. I've come to find out, because I've watched people talk, and then they talk, and then they talk, and by the time it gets back to the Shoreline Club, it's just drink and go to meetings, and people are talking about killing themselves. But the people that are walking, you know what I mean? John follows Jim, and he's got somebody following him, and they're smiling and laughing, and they're doing what they do. The same with Patty and her girl, the same with Mike and his. I just say those names because I know those people, Tommy and Sean. You know what I mean? I watched them get sober in New York on Denny Potter's couch, and Sean's been sober ever since, and he's got guys following him. And he had 30 days. So it's a real key, obviously key. I just never listened or was willing to be honest. I thought people were going to judge me. And obviously it worked for most of the people in this room. I don't know. And then our speaker's Abby.
Abby, I'm an alcoholic.
Abby!
It's good to be here. It's good to be sober. There's a booking issue, so I'm the consolation prize. we don't really know if there was a speaker supposed to come or who it was, but I'm here. My sobriety date is October 19th of 2007. This is my home group, and it's really good to speak in front of my home group. It's an honor. Thanks, Jim, for asking me to speak. I love my home group. I'm really, really, really lucky. 30 days sober, I found this meeting. I lived down the block at the time, and I'm really lucky to find a group of people who are really living this program. You know, the energy that I feel in this room tonight was there the night 2.5 years ago when I first came here, and it was just something that really attracted me. I hadn't really, I had really honestly only been to maybe two or three other meetings before this meeting, and I didn't really know what AA was all about, but I guess something clicked in me, like, there must be something here, because I kept coming back to this meeting. You know, the speaker was funny, you know, there's just this energy, and, you know, and, like, I like to party, you know. And these look like the partiers, you know. This is like, well, look like, well, this is where it's at. So, you know, I'm really, really grateful that I didn't have to be one of those people who came in and out of the rooms for years and years and years not hearing a message, you know, because I heard it right away. And, you know, I'll never be grateful enough for that. I got a little choked up. I drank for a little while. Before that, I was really, like, you know, growing up, I was just, like, the sweet little Abigail. You know, everybody liked me. I just followed the rules, you know. I was kind of weird, but, you know, I never really got in a lot of trouble, but I always wanted to get in trouble. I wanted to be one of the bad kids. I just didn't have the guts to do it, you know. I looked at my sister, and she got in trouble a lot. She got a lot of attention from my parents, and I wanted that too. You know, so around middle school, I started doing really bad in school, and they started yelling at me, and I'm like, they love me. They're finally paying attention to me. So that was kind of like, you know, because I just, like, you know, I need a lot of attention. Like, a lot. Like, I was really glad that there's a lot of people at the meeting tonight, you know. It's good. But, yeah, I was just, you know, really awkward, really weird. I mean, I can't really tell you much about if I had, you know, if I felt like a hole in my soul back then. I know around, my adolescence, around 13, 14 years old, I was starting to think about suicide, you know, before I picked up a drink. But earlier than that, I just knew I was really weird. I mean, I would wear pink leopard print pants to school, you know, and I had, like, a matching blue pair. And I would wear, like platform shoes this big, you know, the Spice Girls was really big back then, and I was just like, I dressed like a Spice Girl to school, and I was already really tall, you know, and I put on the big platform, like, sneakers, not even, like high heels or anything, they were weird, you know, I'd be, like, towering over everyone, you know, and I had glasses and braces, I was really pale and had bangs, I was just really, and then I had, I had, like, rats as pets, you know, and, like, mice. I was just, like, really weird. You know, I realized after a while that expressing my individuality wasn't the way to get people to like me, you know. So I started to address how I thought everyone else was dressing. I started to listen to the kind of music that I thought everyone else was listening to. I started to try to squeeze my way into these different groups of people, and I wanted to be friends with everybody. I wanted everyone to freaking love me, you know? And I would read those, like, teen magazines and stuff and try to do my makeup, and my face would be a different color than the rest of my body. You know, I'd put on too much bronzer, or, you know, I started trying to tweeze my eyebrows, and I didn't know when to stop. For about a year, I had no eyebrows. So, you know, leopard print pants, platforms, and no eyebrows. So, and I remember writing my journal when I was, like, you know, 14 years old. I was in eighth grade. I was like, I'm so depressed. I am so depressed, and I don't know why. I had no idea. I didn't know what was wrong with me. You know, I grew up in a nice family, a nice home. I had everything. You know, I had everything I ever wanted. And I just didn't, there was just this emptiness I started feeling, and I started cutting myself at that age. And, you know, I don't know. You know, looking back, I guess I can attribute that to the spiritual malady that I feel when I'm not drinking and I'm not working a program, because it's the same feeling. It's that same emptiness that I'm not good enough, and that nobody likes me, and that I'm just an idiot and I can't do anything right, you know, and I'm just better off dead, because it's just easier that way, because life is hard and being me sucks. So what happened was I went from middle school to high school. I switched from public school to private school, and I didn't know anybody who went there. I knew one girl, and she was weird, and she listened to show tunes and stuff, but so I didn't really have, like, a good social connection. But yeah, she's still weird. I actually still go to school with this girl. She went to my college too, and she's in one of my classes right now. She's still weird, but I carpooled with her, too. It was really embarrassing. She lived in my town. And as if I wasn't, like, uncool enough, you know? Anyway, so I didn't know anyone, and I wanted, you know, I didn't have aspirations of, like, going to a really good college or, you know, doing really well in school. I just thought I was going to be really popular, you know? I, like, watched the teen movies, and they, you know, had the prom queen and the homecoming queen. She was a cheerleader. And I'm like, that's who I want to be, you know? And, yeah, it didn't work out that way. My high school didn't even have a cheerleading squad, and, like, I did not go to my prom or my homecoming or any of that stuff. I was way too drunk to do those things. By that point. And I hung out with the bad kids by that point, and they weren't doing that kind of stuff. So anyway, so I get to the school, and everyone's just, like, beautiful and fabulous, like, tan, gorgeous, like, really nice cars, and everyone seems to have a beautiful boyfriend, and, you know, there I am, just awkward, uncomfortable. I don't know how to talk. I don't know what to say to people. And it's, I think it's, looking back, it was probably really obvious to people that I was trying way too hard. You know, because I put up this front, like, I'm just like you, I like the same things as you, like me, you know, and I don't know, it just, it failed miserably, because I just, I didn't know who I was, and I didn't know who I wanted to be. I just wanted to be whatever you wanted me to be, and so, you know, I'm going around the school, and I made friends, but they were the good kids, and they were really lame, you know, like, going to a movie on a Friday night was not cutting it for me. It was not enough excitement, it wasn't fun enough, it was just, no. You know, I was already, like, stealing cigarettes and, like, you know, doing some other smoking pot on the side and stuff like that. But mostly just by myself. And I just, you know, I noticed all the kids, the cool kids, they were all drinking. You know, so I was like, that's what I got to do. You know, I set out to start drinking, and I didn't know anything about drinking. I come from a, yeah, there's a lot of alcoholism in my family. My grandmother committed suicide. She's alcoholic. My grandfather was in a drunk driving accident when he was like 70. You know, you know, when the other kids were stealing alcohol from their parents' liquor cabinet, I was stealing it from, like, under the bathroom sink or, you know, in the closet. You know, there was not, I didn't have a lot of examples of normal drinking, and my sister's just crazy, you know, so I didn't have any examples of, like, this is what normal, sane drinking is, you know. But, so my first night drunk, I was about 15 years old, it was Halloween, and this girl was having a party. And pretty much everyone in my school was going to. I went to a really small high school. Pretty much everyone was going. And so I was like, okay. Me and my other little loser friends, we got all dressed up. You know, we put on our makeup. And I thought I looked really good. and we go to this party. And okay, we get dropped off by someone's mom or something like that. And what happened was, it was in this girl's pool house. And the parents knew that she was having a party, but they didn't know there was going to be drinking there. Right? So very covertly, like, someone's older cousin sneaks around back and brings, like, some vodka and some beer. And it took a while for the alcohol to get there. So, well, before that, I, like, you know, I'm like, oh, yeah, I go party all the time. You know, I hang out with my other friends. You don't know them, you know. I used to make up boyfriends, you know. I used to say he goes to another school. He wasn't in the yearbook because he wasn't there on picture day. Like, and I'm not even joking. I did not talk to someone of the opposite sex or even make direct eye contact until I started drinking. You know, I was terrified of guys. No idea how to talk to them. I mean, I barely knew how to talk to females, you know. But, yeah, that all changed when I started drinking. yeah, yes. so, anyway, so, you know, I put my $5 in, you know, started drinking some, like, Smirnoffs and, like, really cheap beer and some really gross stuff. And I was just off to races, you know. And next thing I know, I'm blacking out and passing out and puking all over the place. I'm, like, crawling all over the ground, you know, like, in a skirt, you know. Doesn't work out that well. And, you know, I'm literally just, I was, like, hovering over the toilet. The girl's parents come in. They're like, you need to call your parents right now. So they hand me the phone, and I was like, shit. What do I do? So I called my cell phone number. You know, my cell phone rang in the next room. So, you know, and they're like, yeah, that didn't work out. But I ended up just getting a ride home with someone else's, from someone else, staying at someone else's house. My parents never knew what happened. They never knew that I drank. the consequences that I face were the social kind of consequences, like, Abby's sloppy drunk, she can't hold her alcohol, it was pretty obvious after that night that I hadn't drank a lot before that, that I was a novice to drinking, and that kind of blew my cover, which is pretty embarrassing. Other than that, you know, I was like, drinking is awesome, you know? I this is all, like, in retrospect, but, I mean, after that, I sought it out. I absolutely sought it out. I needed to drink. I needed to hang out with the people that were drinking, you know? And it was, I just love the way that alcohol makes me feel. You know, I have a couple of drinks, and I start feeling comfortable. I start feeling good. Maybe I can have a conversation with you, you know? A couple more drinks, I feel like I'm like the life of the party. I'm dancing on tables, you know? A few more drinks, and I feel like I'm the hottest girl in the room, and you're just lucky to be in my presence, you know? And from going from that shy, awkward, nervous girl who can't even look people in the eye to feeling like I'm God's gift to earth. It's like, you know, who wouldn't want that, right? Like, who cares about throwing up or getting puke in my hair or, like, you know, making an ass out of myself? Who gives a shit, you know? I mean, this stuff was, I mean, it made me feel better than anything ever did. And I loved it. I loved it. And I sought out all the kids that were drinking a lot, sought out the kids that were partying a lot, and then I found the kids that were partying even more than that, and they were doing all the hard drugs, and they were the kind of kids that were, they were getting arrested, they were going to rehab. I'm thinking, wow, I don't want to go to college, I want to go to jail, like, this is, like, the life for me. And, you know, obviously, you know, I don't know if you could tell, but I'm not a criminal, I'm not cool, I'm just a wimp, I couldn't commit a crime to save my life. You know, I never really stole, I never did anything, I did a little shoplifting here and there, but, I hung around with the kind of kids that were doing it. They were, like, older and stuff, you know, and they could buy me booze, and they had access to a lot of different substances, and I didn't care what it was that you put in front of me, but I'd do it, because I hated being sober, and I hated being me. So if something could change my perspective on the world and change the way I felt, then I didn't care what it was. I didn't ask. I always pretended, of course, I pretended that I had done it before just to be cool, and I had no idea what something would do to me. You know, like, eat these or sniff this or whatever, smoke it, whatever. I was like, okay, I'm down. nothing worked like alcohol. Nothing worked to fill that hole in my soul like alcohol did. And, you know, I went down really quick. I mean, I say I had a lot of fun drinking. My sponsor always says that, but I really did. The first couple of years was, like, parties. It was fellowship. It was, like, fun. It was mostly a weekend thing. I mostly did the other substances during the week and then drank on the weekends. You know, get me through the week, you know. You know, I don't know, someone said, like, geometry is really tough, you know. I had to get something to get through the week. And then the weekend, I couldn't wait. I had to think about it all week. I was like, I'm going to drink this weekend. You know, I couldn't wait. And, you know, I was like the party girl, kind of drunk. You know, I'd be like, let's go streaking, you know. And it'd just be me. Just me running around naked like an idiot. That's the kind of drunk that I was, you know. And people people really wanted to hang out with me because I kind of found it, like, because they're like, you know, having so much fun to drink with. Like, she's always down for anything, and, like, well, you know, I wanted to party for days, and you know, I certainly got you know, I went from not talking to guys to, like, you know, I just, like, walk in a room, start making out with someone, you know. Just like,
ooh.
Yeah. Not anymore. Yeah. I'm getting married soon. Yeah. But yeah. I was where was I? Yeah, that was it in a nutshell. But I went down really quick in my drinking. I remember writing in this journal. By then I had, like, a web blog or something like that. I upgraded. I was writing about how, you know, I was trying to, like, make promises not to drink that weekend. I'd be really proud if I made it a weekend without drinking. You know, I'd be really excited. I remember one weekend I was like, I didn't drink this weekend. I drank like 2 bottles of Robitussin or something like that. I mean, I would be like if I didn't have anything, I'd be like snoring Tylenol PM. I mean, it was like crazy. By the time I was like 17 years old, I was like chugging vodka on my way to school. I was walking around school drinking vodka, and you know, I remember I got into a car accident and I didn't know what happened. I was driving along one side of the road and I ended up on the other side of the road in a guardrail, and I didn't know how I got there. You know, everyone asked me what happened. I said I slipped on black ice and everyone bought it, and I was just so fucked up. I had no idea what was going on. That kind of stuff started happening, and I my school thought I was insane. I was allowed to leave school whenever I wanted to. Because like I might have a breakdown any minute. They're like, if things get too overwhelming for you, you can just leave. Just sign yourself out. You know, like, yeah, it was pretty sweet. I mean, I went to the kind of school where, like, you know, they weren't gonna not graduate you. You know, they kind of have to. I ended up going to college. I don't know how it happened. I mean, I'm just a master manipulator. You know, like I said, I convinced all... I really did think I was crazy. I mean, I was begging my parents to send me a psychiatrist and therapist by the time I'm 16 years old, because I thought I was just insane. I didn't know what was wrong with me. One minute, I'm in the fetal position, rocking back and forth, crying, cutting my wrists, and the next minute, I'm happy and I feel good. You know, I didn't equate at that time that when I felt miserable, I was sober, and when I felt good, I was drunk. I didn't know that at that time. You know, I can see that looking back. But I just thought I was insane. You know, I didn't know what the hell was wrong with me. They put me on all sorts of medications, every different color of the rainbow, really. And it was awesome. So, you know, my psychiatrist, I used him like my drug dealer, pretty much. I mean, it was just legal. So anyway, I go to college and I decided that these drugs were my problem. You know, I'm staying up for days at end. You know, looking at the, talking to the posters on my wall, you know, like they're talking to me. And, you know, I was like, normal people don't do this. Normal people aren't like this paranoid and think that people are after them and, you know, other crazy shit like that. So I decided I was just going to drink. Everybody drinks, you know. Maybe I like to drink a little bit more. By this point, people were questioning my drinking. They started making things like, and I was telling people, this is so funny. Now that I know about the allergy and all that stuff, I would just be like, yeah, for some reason, once I start drinking, I can't stop till I go to bed, you know? I'm like, I can't really explain it. That's just how I drink, you know? Like, now going back, I'm an alcoholic. That's why I drink that way. Like, I have an abnormal reaction to alcohol. I just thought I just really like to party, you know? And so I get into college, and, you know, I think everything's going to be different, just like high school. You know, I'm going to make new friends. I'm going to be able to balance my social life and my academics, and, you know, it's just going to be really good. And, you know, I was not the kind of, like, person who could move around a lot. I went to college 20 minutes away from my parents' house. You know, I was just terrified to do anything different. I was terrified of change. I was terrified of people, you know. And, you know, this when I got to college, I had to make all new friends, and that was really scary. So I had to be drunk all the time, pretty much, to make friends. And by this point, I was making friends and losing them a few days later, you know, because I was just really out of control. I was blacking out every single night of the week. And I drank with people who drank every night, but they didn't black out every night. They could stop at one or two, or they could have more. It was their choice. I didn't have that choice, but I didn't know that. You know, I didn't know what was wrong with me. And one night I got in trouble in my dorm. I, like, fell. I don't really know what happened. I fell or something, and I was, like, bleeding all over the place. And so the public safety officers come and talk to me. And they're like, how many did you have tonight? And I'm like, 2. And they didn't, they said, what did you drink tonight or something? I just said 2. Like, I didn't specify what I drank or, like, I had 2. So they made me see the substance abuse counselor. Like, long story short, you know, I had to fill out this questionnaire, and I was really honest for some reason. I don't know if it was a cry for help, but I told her everything, every drug I had ever done. I told her how much I drank. And, of course, I lessened it, you know, just a little bit. You know, I told her what was going on, and she was really, really concerned. And she's a really nice lady, but she was definitely not alcoholic. And she would try to tell me things like, why don't you just stick to beer? you know, try not taking shots. Try just slowing down a little bit. Maybe you can have a cigarette in between drinks. And let me tell you, I honestly tried to do these things. Absolutely. I honestly did. But I couldn't. Once I put one little tiny bit of alcohol in my body, once I had that first sip, you know, I don't know what's going to happen. I just don't. And that's why today I think I have a healthy fear of alcohol. You know, I don't want to figure out what's going to happen when I take that first drink. You know, my life is so awesome today that I'm not going to risk it, you know. So anyway, but I stopped seeing her, of course, because she was just, like, annoying or something. But what she did was she helped plant the seed that there was something a little abnormal about my drinking, you know. I got sober about a year after that. And what happened in the next year is it was just awful. You know, I ended up getting raped one night in my college just really violently. And, you know, I don't even really remember much of what happened, but I remember just thinking, like, I don't like these consequences that I'm having, so I stopped drinking with people. You know, I didn't, like, stop drinking, I just stopped drinking with people, you know, because people, like, questioned my drinking. You know, I was kind of like, I mean, I'd wake up, I didn't, you know, most of the times I didn't know what happened, I didn't know what I said to people, I didn't know who I'd, like, hooked up with. I didn't know anything, you know, and I didn't like that. And most times I just try to play along, like, you know, oh yeah, that was so funny, you know, I was so wasted, and, you know, I had no idea what people were talking about, and it was really scary, you know, to be like a young girl in a place where I didn't know that well, people I really don't know. I mean, it's scary. And so I started drinking just by myself, and it was good for a little while. I just, you know, I wouldn't have to get out of bed. I just had a mini fridge right by my dorm room. I just opened it up. I had stocked Bacardi 151 and bought, you know, really high proof vodka because I just wanted whatever really would get the job done the quickest. You know? I didn't ever really, like, pee the bed until, like, I started drinking, you know? I'd wake up and there was, like, oh my god, it's just disgusting. I mean, I hardly ever showered. I mean, it was gross. My poor roommate, oh my god. She thought it was really crazy, but, and I used her as, like, my personal therapist. I'm like, Amy, I don't know what's wrong with me. It's funny, my first sponsor was named Amy, too, but I'm like, Amy, I don't know what's wrong with me. I can't stop drinking. I'm so depressed, blah, blah, blah. And so I went to my first AA meeting, kind of out of the blue. I didn't know anything about AA. I'd never been to any treatment before. I never had, I just didn't know. And I thought maybe AA would be like that substance abuse counselor and just show me some tips on how to control and enjoy my drinking, you know? And I'm like, sounds good to me. And so I go to this meeting, and it was Madison, and it was a Thursday night Big Book meeting, and I got there, and there's this guy there, and he has about 25 years sober. And I was like, thinking that's, like, a little bit extreme. I'm like, holy shit. It didn't, like, give me hope, like, AA works or anything like that. I was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. They want you to drink, like, stop drinking completely, you know? I'm like, I don't think I'm that bad. And I just kind of felt like, what does that guy do for fun? Like, his life would be so boring, you know? That sucks. You don't drink. And then, you know, we read Working with Others, and we read those, you know, people call those the 12-step promises, like the drunk will burn your mattress or, you know, dangle and stuff like that. I'm like, and then we all held hands and said a Lord's Prayer afterwards, and I was like, I'm getting the F out of here. I'm never coming back. I'm way too cool and chic for God. And I was pretty thoroughly convinced I was alcoholic, though. I was. I didn't really know exactly. I didn't know about the allergy or the spiritual malady or the mental obsession, but I knew in my heart that I didn't drink like other people. But I thought I could be like my dad and manage my life around my drinking, you know. And unfortunately, I am kind of one of those alcoholics that's, you know, not of the non-functioning variety. So when I drink, nothing happens for, like, weeks, you know. Like, I had a 0.6 GPA at school. I had hardly any friends left. I just had alcohol, you know. And I mean, I drank for about maybe 6 months after I went to that first AA meeting. I drank, and it was just horrible, you know, to have that in your head that, you know, just trying to prove that you could drink. You know, that's what essentially I was trying to do. I was just trying to prove that I could drink. It was horrible, you know. I couldn't leave the house without taking a drink. I couldn't talk to anyone without taking a drink. I couldn't see my friends that I'd known for years. I was too scared to even go see them without taking a drink first, you know. And I got to a point where I just felt so hopeless. I was 19 years old, and I felt like this is the way I'm going to be for the rest of my life. You know, I didn't think that, I knew that, somehow in my heart I knew that I wasn't, this isn't a stage I'm going to grow out of, you know, this isn't, I'm not like other people, you know, I'm really messed up, and I couldn't get my head to shut off anymore, I couldn't, you know, I used to drink and everything would be okay, you know, and I was drinking and everything wasn't okay, you know, I couldn't, I get really emotional because I just never want to feel like that ever again, you know. It's just the worst feeling in the world. Like, I couldn't drink myself happy anymore. You know, booze just really stopped working for me. That was it. That's what got me into AA. You know, I felt suicidal all the time. And I just, you know, like I said, I'm a wimp. I couldn't get the courage to kill myself. I mean, I wrote a very dramatic suicide note, but and I did, you know, a little cutting, but. You know, nothing too crazy. And I come into AA because, you know, and I didn't, this is, you know, again, like, this is all in retrospect. Like, I didn't know it at the time, but I came into AA because I didn't know where else to go. You know, I tried psychiatrists, I tried therapy, and my friends tried to help me, my family tried to help me. Everyone was there. Everyone loved me. You know, everyone wanted to see me do okay, you know. But I just wasn't, and I was just turning into a really crappy person. Really, you know, hard to believe, really selfish.
No.
Just really self-centered. Like, I'm not even joking. People's parents would die, and I would think that, like, but what about me? You know, like, my life is so hard. And it was just, like, it's crazy to look back at it. But anyway, so I get into AA, and I went to this outpatient rehab. This is what happened first. I went back to the substance abuse counselor. She told me, like, I can take a leave of absence from school, and I could go to this IOP, intensive outpatient program. And I picked one that I thought didn't have emphasis on, like, 12-step recovery. I ruined the surprise. It did. You know? And I walk into the room, and there's, like, the steps. Oh, we don't have them here. But there's the steps on the wall. There's the traditions on the wall. And I was thinking, shit, you know, I've seen those things before. And I don't like them. Because I just looked at AA like, I know about you AA people. You have to go forever. You know, I wanted a cure. Like, seriously, I wanted to feel good right now. You know, I don't know what I wanted to do, if I wanted to drink normally eventually. I don't know what the hell I wanted to do. But I did not, this isn't what I wanted, you know, to have to go to AA for the rest of my life and sit in a room with people and talk about my feelings or whatever the hell you guys do here, you know. I didn't want any part of it. And I start going to these meetings, and honestly, like, I didn't hear anything in the meetings. I didn't really, I might have only gone to one meeting, actually, maybe one or two meetings before I came to this one. I just saw people, and I saw hope, you know, that's it. I don't know, like, I didn't know what the hell was going on. I didn't know sponsor big book sets, I don't know. I pretended to, I was afraid to ask questions because I didn't want to look stupid, but, you know, I just saw that people were sober and they were happy, you know, that's it. And, even if they were miserable, I still thought they were happy. I don't know. Like I said, it was 30 days sober, and I was here, and a woman came up to me after the meeting, and she offered to sponsor me. And I actually had someone else from the meeting a couple weeks earlier, because I went to this meeting for 3 weeks until I got a sponsor. Someone chased me out of the meeting, like, handed me her card, and she's like, give me a call, we'll go to a meeting. And I'm like, I made a friend. I was, like, really excited. And then I never called her. And then the next woman was a little bit more direct, and so I was just, like, a little bit more receptive, I guess. And she's like, okay, call me tomorrow, and we can start going through the 12 steps. And I was like, whoa. whoa. Because at my IOP, they're telling me, like, you know, you don't have to rush in the steps. You know, you got to, like, let the fog clear first and all that stuff. You know. Which is fine, you know. I mean, what if, like, you know, if you want to let the fog clear, you know, I don't know. Maybe you'll be drunk by the time it gets cleared. I don't know. But I mean, I don't even really remember going to the steps, so. But it worked. I'm still here, so. So I call out this woman, and she, I come meet her at a meeting. She was getting out of a meeting, and I come meet her, and we had to go pick up this drunk woman. She's going on a 12-step call, and you know, we're riding down, and we just start talking. You know, she just started sharing a drunk story. I started sharing a drunk story. You know, Jim always shares about that with his meeting with his first sponsor. I mean, it's just like that. We're just swapping stories. Apparently, we went through the first two steps that night. Don't remember. I remember when I got my first sponsee, when I got assigned to my first sponsee. my sponsor was like, okay, Abby, go take her through the first step. And I was like, well, what is it? I mean, I don't know. I don't know. I didn't know how to, I didn't remember going through it myself, so. Needless to say, she did not stick with me as a sponsor. But I didn't even know how to take her through the steps. But, so. You know, and I felt at ease with this woman. I felt at peace with her, you know. I mean, a little bit, of course, I was trying to impress her, like, you know, because I thought I had, like, I don't know what I was thinking. I thought I was such a badass. And, of course, I come here, everyone has multiple felonies, and they're, like, you know, doing all this other stuff. And I'm, like, just this little, like, wimpy kid from the suburbs that I just drink a little bit too much, you know. But I mean, I know today it doesn't really matter, like, what got you here. You know, that we're all alcoholic, we've all experienced, we've all drank the same thing, we've all felt the same feelings, it doesn't really matter how much I drank. I remember feeling, like, kind of bad, like, I don't really have a lot of experience, and then someone told me, like, you know, but you have the experience of getting sober young, you know, and that's really valuable, because you can show other people that, you know, you can get sober young, you know. Actually, Eric told me that, I'll give him a little shout out. So, where was I? Okay, so, I digress. We started talking, and then we pick up this drunk woman, and she's, like, out of her mind, you know, crazy, insane. Apparently, she just has been trying to get sober for a while, blah, blah, blah. You know, she's, like, burning cigarette holes in the back seat. She's like, can we listen to music? And, like, trying to talk about, like, spiritual principles and stuff. And she's like, I don't know, whatever. And so we get to the diner, because there's no other meetings. All the meetings had already gotten out by then. And so we go to the diner, and we're just sitting there eating, and I start trying to give this woman advice and stuff, and she's just like, I want what you guys have. Like, you guys are sober, you know, this is great. I'm thinking, wow, this woman, like, I'm the shit, you know? Like, she wants what I got. You know, and later, my old sponsor, she told me that she just kind of let me go, because I just, you know, obviously I didn't know what the hell I'm talking about, you know? But she let me go because the woman wouldn't remember what I said anyway. You know? And then she seemed to be enjoying myself. So, but I remember driving home that night and just feeling really good, like feeling really awesome about myself and just feeling really good, like I had a really good night, and like that was, now I know that was my first taste in helping others in Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's where the magic is, you know. I experienced, you know, one drunk talking to another drunk, I experienced, you know, helping another alcoholic, and I like the way that made me feel, you know, and I still to this day love the way that makes me feel. Anyway, I go through the rest of the steps with this woman. You know, I was very distracted in my early recovery. I was, you know, of course, I was just such a brat. You know, it's like the world's worst newcomer. So I went to parties. I, you know, hung out with people, like, smoking pot in the car. I'm like, and I'd be like, I'm a recovering alcoholic. I can't partake. You know, and, you know, I had this boyfriend at the time, and I didn't like him at all, but it was better than being alone, you know? So I'd, like, run home after the meeting to, like, be, like, actually not even, like, wait by my computer to see if he would instant message me. That's how sad it was, like, to see, you know, he didn't even call me. You know, he just, like, instant messaged me on AIM. And I would, that's what I did after meetings. I said I like going to the diner and hanging out because I'm like, yeah, why would I want to hang out with you losers? You know, I gotta go hang out with my cat. You know. So anyway, I got a little distracted in my early recovery, but I started going through the rest of the steps, and I experienced, you know, the magic of Alcoholics Anonymous. I did. I did a fourth and fifth step with my first sponsor, and I shared things with this woman that I had never shared with anybody in my entire life. And I've had some of the same friends since third grade, you know. And, you know, I got really honest with her about the last step, about that rape. I had never told anyone about it, and I told her about it in my fifth step, you know. And she wasn't nice at all. She kept telling me that I'm not a victim.
Oh!
You know, can you believe it? And, you know, she didn't spare my feelings at all. And thank God, you know, someone had to smash the delusion that everyone was out to get me and that, you know, everyone else is the source of my problems. Like, someone had to. Because, you know, I kind of had the idea that I was becoming a really shitty person and that I, you know, I was being really selfish on a lot of stuff. Because I felt guilt about it, you know what I mean? Yeah. Especially after I sobered up and I didn't have anything to take that away. I felt guilt about it. But I didn't know, really, the extent of how selfish, how self-centered I was. You know. And everything was about me. Yeah. And, so I felt this sense of relief after I did that because, like, to this day, I don't have an excuse. I can't be a victim anymore. And that is such a freeing, it's so relieving. Like, I can't even tell you to point out my part in something and to know that I can't be pissed off at somebody because of their actions and that I can't let them play God in my life and that the way people think about me has nothing to do with me and that's none of my business. It's just so freeing. You know, I thought I had to, you know, change everyone's mind about me. I thought I had to do all this managing and arranging. And to know that I don't have to, it's just, you know, it's incredible, you know. And I did some amends, and I wish I had a lot of, like, really powerful amends stories, but I really don't. Most people were like, oh, good thing you're sober. We're not really surprised. you know, like, my friends were all really excited that I stopped drinking because, you know, I was a hot mess. Like, oh, my God, I would drive them in blackouts, you know. I'd be like, I'm fine, you know, and, like, endanger their lives and, you know, mess up my parents' car. You know, I only have 10 minutes left, so I'm gonna skip through this. But anyway, you know, I did my amends. You know, and I hear people say that I finished them. I don't really think that amends are ever finished. You know, I think that there's definitely people out there I've harmed. I don't know. You know, I know that God will put the people in my life that I need to make amends to. You know, I have that faith. And then I try to, you know, my sponsor took me through 10, 11, and 12, try to, you know, explain to me how to maintain that feeling that I got after going through the steps initially. Because let me tell you, I felt on fire after going through the steps. I always had this buzz. I felt I just wanted to help everybody. And it wasn't even like I was trying to sponsor people in my IOP, and they were like, we're supposed to have a year sober to sponsor people. And they were like getting really freaked out by me, you know, because I'm like, you gotta go through steps, come to my home group, you know. They're like, who are you? Because I was the girl that came in, I didn't talk for about a month, and then after that, I would just cry every day in group therapy. It was so embarrassing. I see this guy on a regular basis that was in my IOP group therapy thing, and I'm just like, so embarrassed. I'm like, oh my God, he knew anyone. I was like, brand new. You know, like, so I started, you know, my sponsor told me in the very beginning, you know, pray. And whenever you're not feeling too good about yourself, go and try to be of service to someone else. You know, that's what she told me to do during my fourth step. You know, when I was writing stuff that I didn't really want to write about, that I should go out and try to help somebody. And I didn't get that. I didn't understand that at all. You know, now I do. Now I understand the power of helping others. You know, now I know. That makes me feel complete and whole inside and fills up that hole in my soul. Like, nothing ever, like, booze didn't even do it, you know? So I started, the first girl that I sponsored that stuck around for a while, she was crazy and I loved her. until she annoyed the crap out of me. I still talk to her. She had a lot of problems. She was calling me multiple times a day. Her father was calling me. Her grandmother was calling me. And I had no idea what to do with her. And he was like, just get her in the car, start going, you know, just start talking. And I'm like, oh, God. By this time, I knew how to take people through the steps a little bit better. So I took her through the steps, I got her to her amends, and, you know, I remember calling up my sponsor, Amy, one day, and I said, I get it. I know what everyone's talking about. I feel that buzz. You know, I experience being a part of someone else's recovery, which is just tenfold more amazing than going through it yourself. You know, to watch someone else's, the lights come on, to start watching them enjoy the fellowship, you know, because I was not, like, fellowship yay at first at all. Of course not. And I was just, but afterwards, like, I was like, oh, I can't wait to go to the diner. You know, this is so cool. You know, that was cool. And, of course, I mean, my first year, I was pretty, like, bratty newcomer. I fought with my sponsor a lot. I'd hang up on her. I would, one time she gave me a speaker CD to listen to, and I threw it out the window. after I drove away, though. Like, I was driving down Summit Ave, and I'm like, fuck this. You know, there were parts I really didn't want to stay sober. And a lot, you know, had to do with, I was getting a lot of distractions. A lot has happened in my sobriety. You know, of course, after I got out of the relationship with that one guy that I liked, I got in a relationship with a guy that I really liked. And about 5 seconds later, I had a baby. We were dating for a little bit, and I got pregnant, and I am at 20 years old. That was the last thing I wanted to do, was have a baby. You know, but I knew in my heart that's what I had to do. You know, I knew, but at this point, that I was like 7 months sober or something like that. That God had done this for a reason. You know, that things were happening the way they were supposed to happen. And you know, I really wasn't too happy about this thing. I was hormonal and just insane and like, oh God. Yeah. She was laughing, but yeah. But today I have the most amazing life, and I don't deserve any of it. I really feel like I don't. I wake up every day, and I'm like, why is my life so good? You know, what did I do? You know, and I can't explain it other than God. I can't explain it. You know, I had this baby, and I was really depressed after she was born. Really depressed. You know, and I didn't feel that. Like, I was holding her in my arms. I didn't feel, like, that motherly, like, connection that I heard everyone talking about. I didn't feel that. I was like, who is this strange baby? I don't know what to do with her. You know, and, you know, now I just love being a mother. I love it. I have, like, the happiest baby in the whole world. She's always smiling, and she has this bright blue eyes, and she's so beautiful. And, I am sorry. I'm back in school now, and I go to class, and I show up, and I do what I'm supposed to do, because that's what I learned in Alcoholics Anonymous, is to show up, you know, and I've been able to take sponsor directions. I got a new sponsor about a year sober, and she's fabulous, and I love her, and I listened to her only because she, I really wanted her to like me in the beginning, because she's like Mrs. AA, and I wanted to think that I was like Mrs. AA, you know, and, you know, I've been able to apply that, you know, at work and at school. I've been able to apply that same principle of, you know, taking direction and just doing what I'm supposed to be doing. Showing up and suiting up and just doing what I'm supposed to be doing. And, you know, I have a job, and I have a fiance. I'm getting married a couple months. And I don't know if you heard my story, but I'm not really marriage material, you know. And for some reason, like, this guy wants to marry me, and he treats me like an absolute queen. Like, he really does. Like, I mean, this whole, like, pregnancy thing really worked out. Which is good, right? I mean, it's really, like, you know, I have my family's in my life, and they love me, and they trust me. You know, and my mom is, like, the happiest grandma in the world. She's, like, crazy. She's like, she called me up. I need my Chloe fix. That's my daughter's name. She's like, I need my fix. I'm like, okay, Mom, I'll bring the baby over. You know, and, you know, the only way I can really explain how I've been able to stay sober and how so many wonderful things have been able to come in my life is that I've always been consistent in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've never been perfect at any of it. You know, never. But I've always reached out my hand to the newcomer every single time I go to a meeting. You know, so I don't want to. a lot of times. Sometimes I hope, well, I don't really, not anymore, because I really enjoy helping others more than I used to, but I used to, like, hope that there wouldn't be any newcomers in the meeting, because I didn't want to help anybody, you know, but I always did anyway, because I wouldn't feel good about myself, because I know that someone chased me out of a meeting and didn't let me go until they gave me their number, you know, and so I know I have to pass that on, you know, and today I get to, I guess it's sponsored by the women, I get to see them come alive. That's really cool. I mean, like, the stuff on the outside is really awesome and great and everything, but the thing that I mean, I can be at peace with myself. You know, I can be alone at peace and comfort, like it says, you know, in the Fifth Step Promise. You know, I can look in the mirror and not hate myself. You know, I don't wake up every day wanting to die. And I'm, you know, I've always had a sponsor, always. I haven't always listened to a sponsor. I haven't always run everything by a sponsor. I haven't told my sponsor everything that's going on in my life, but I've always had one. I've always been able to take a certain amount of direction, you know. I've always, you know, what I understand a sponsor to be is someone who's further down the path who can help lead me to a spiritual life, you know. She's taking me through the steps and teaches me how to help others and teaches me how to live a spiritual life. You know, and I don't think anyone expects anyone to be perfect at this stuff. I don't think anyone expects everyone to sober up and everything's like walking on sunshine 24/7, because it's not. You know, we have to experience pain and we have to experience these things because that's what being alive is about. You know, I love crowning today. I love it. It makes me feel alive. It makes me feel like a person. You know, like I experience pain and I know that's when I have to seek God the most. You know, that's when that's my opportunity to grow with God. And you know, I'm really grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm really, really grateful that I was able to share my story with you guys tonight, and it's really an honor to speak for my home group, and that's all I have. Thanks for letting me share.